Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. Debbie Dashinger here, and today I am speaking with Tyler Ellison, who is a cosmic channel for the extraterrestrial being named Ryo of the Sassani. Ryo shares information about the nature of the universe, the nature of the cosmos, your soul, purpose, and your path of destiny. Dare to Dream won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast. Welp Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and its high ranking on Apple Podcasts. Essentially, you can find this show on any podcast or video platform that you engage in. Dare to Dream is sponsored by Dr. Dane Heer and Access Consciousness. They do energy work throughout the world. So if you'd like to take one of their classes or become a facilitator, go to Dr. Dane Heer, HEER.com. Would you like to know your galactic ancestry, your galactic history? Unlock your cosmic potential with a free starseed video and report. Explore various types of starseeds and uncover your galactic origins. Take part in this chance to connect with your star lineage. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Every URL given out in the show today will be in the show notes in the description, and that's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. I want to invite you to check out my second interview with George Nori on Gaia TV. Please watch. It helps. We deep dive into the history of the Earth and shamanic and extraterrestrial connections throughout history, plus some information about the Hopis and the ant beings you won't believe. Go to my gift to you, by the way, a free 1-week subscription to Gaia TV, debbiedashinger.com/Gaia, debbiedashinger.com/GAIA. I've had a lot of people writing to me after watching that episode, and I'm thrilled it's resonating with so many, and so many people are learning things. So after you watch that episode, go back and find my first episode from last year with George Nori, completely different conversation. And finally, an upcoming event I'm inviting you to. It is happening next week, so you'll want to join right away. I am facilitating a sacred despacho ceremony on April 9th. That's Wednesday. I'm a certified shamanic energy healer and also Moon Aiki rites practitioner. What is a despacho? In the Peruvian language, it means to dispatch. So we're going to work with the shamanic lineage and with spirit for powerful ways to shift your life, to release what no longer serves you, which, by the way, is what this year is all about, and also start to create big miracles and new realities. I didn't even realize when I chose the date for this class, for this ceremony, that we are right now in the midst, this month, this time, the most powerful time to create, to step into why you're here. So how perfect is that? You have to register to get the Zoom link and the details. And for the ceremony, you want to go to debbied.net/despacho. It's debbied.net/despacho. I'm so excited to work with you. And I know you'll be emailing me afterwards and telling me the miracles coming into your life, because I've done this before and I've got the testimonies from people who've changed completely their lives. I'll be doing the ceremony with you every step of the way, holding the entire class in the container. My guest, Tyler Ellison, is a magnetic force of ancient magic and modern mysticism, a metaphysical magician and acupuncturist. Tyler fuses the realms of spirit and science, guiding those who seek to unlock the divine power within. As a certified instructor of the Universal Healing Tao, he leads his students on journeys of profound transformation, awakening the soul's hidden potential. Widely known for his channeling of Ryoka, a hybrid ET being from the Sasanian civilization. I also like to be clear, the beings are called Sasanis. Their planet is Esasani because it's a place of light. And widely known for his channeling of Ryo, Tyler also communicates with Egyptian gods, Goetic spirits, and archangels. His teachings are an intoxicating blend of esoteric knowledge and cutting-edge energy work, offering those in his presence the keys to master their spiritual essence and access their deepest magic. In Tyler's world, the mystical becomes real and the extraordinary is within your grasp. And you're going to want to stick around because Tyler will be channeling a little later on in the show. And in order to learn more, go to his website, thegalacticguide.com. And with that, I welcome Tyler Ellison to Dare to Dream. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Debbie, for having me here. It's a real pleasure, and it's great to be connecting again. We had a fabulous time in Sedona at the channel panel, and here we are bringing more information, making more connections. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, me too. Little bit more of a deep dive here. So you channel beings from many dimensions, Tyler. Can you explain to us who you channel and how they are connected to you?
Certainly. So my channeling journey began right around the year 2014. I was exposed to channeling through Daryl Anka's work, Channeling Bashar, and I found the information incredibly amazing. And I strived to learn how to channel on my own, myself, so I could guide myself in a very nuanced, detailed way. And that led me to channeling Pleiadian beings. That was my initial connection with an entity named Mira that I channeled for a number of years. From Mira, I began to channel the Sasanian collective consciousness, and then they introduced me to, at the time, Ryok, which now has evolved into Ryoka. We used Ryo as a type of nickname. You know, people called him that. It's shorter. It's sort of sweet. The Ryoka is the more recent iteration of his name, and it is a reference to the ancient Egyptian civilization and their personal connection to his spirit, his soul as a being. So Ryoka, the main being. I've also worked with, just as the description says, a myriad of different Egyptian deities, channeling them. We had a lot of success in a recent program we did, bringing forth beings like Anubis, bringing forth even Sekhmet, Isis, you know, some very powerful egregores. And other than this, I mean, it's been a lot of the archangelic work, which is particularly beautiful. It's a lot of higher wisdom and deep knowledge into people. So it's a true, I would say, frequency buffet.
It's a cornucopia of amazing beings. I am so
precisely
curious.
Cornucopia.
Are these beings you in the future or the past, or are these beings that you have a soul contract with to allow their wisdom to come through?
It's a very good question. So some of the beings are, in fact, my simultaneously occurring future selves. Some of these beings are my simultaneously occurring past selves. And there are others that are less connected to me as Tyler directly. Nevertheless, any form of consciousness emits a vibrational frequency. So the gift of the human is we can adjust our radio to tune into any station, whether or not they are our personal past self or our personal future self. So some of these beings do share that incarnational sequence with me, where others, they're much more collective. The angels, the Goetia, these are more, in certain schools, they're called egregores, right? They're eternal beings, right, that represent the underlying framework and fabric of creation. So these beings, while they can be channeled, they wouldn't necessarily be my incarnated past or future life. I might have a higher spiritual link to them, right? I might be using some of their energy to project myself here, but they wouldn't be a future self. But there are some that certainly are. And we'll be hearing from one of them today. We'll be bringing, as you had mentioned, Ryoko forth, and we'll get to hear some of that future perspective.
That's incredible. Has everything with Ryoka evolved over time? How has it shaped your personal journey? I mean, I can't imagine it hasn't changed you completely, really, vibrationally, thought-wise, being-wise, and all of that. But how has it intimately altered you and evolved you?
There's a lot of areas where I think transformation has occurred as a result of this continuing relationship with him. I think one of the most noticeable things that this relationship with Ryoka, the channeling relationship with him specifically, has revealed is that the personality mask is incredibly, incredibly fluid. And that is something a lot of channelers, I believe, come to realize, because when we go to channel, we have to temporarily take off our ego personality mask and we exchange that for the mask or super ego of the entity. So this channeling ability and art form has shown me just how easy it is to change personality. And that's a very liberating thing, I feel, because a lot of people feel that their mindset, their constitution, even their astrology and karma sort of defines them, and they feel boxed in and limited from that. The channeling has shown me that the personality is really a consciousness structure that's formed through our experiences and our corresponding interpretations and belief systems related to those experiences. When we shift our viewpoint from the usual human ego to this extraterrestrial perspective or this super mind, we can see our lives, we can see our reality from their view. And it's such an evolved view, a bird's eye view, if you will, that the victim mentalities, the judgments of the past from that viewpoint, they start to unravel. And the underlying issues behind those limitations become transformed, and a person's able to transform themselves through something as simple as seeing their life from this higher viewpoint. So I've certainly seen my relationship to my past change. I've seen my relationship to humanity change again and again and again. It's a really powerful journey, and it truly goes on forever. I think all of us who are on the spiritual path recognize that just what we accomplish spiritually in this lifetime, it barely scratches the surface of the amount of spiritual evolution that is the totality of our soul's journey. And to the points that were being shared earlier, even though it's an infinite spiritual journey, the energies available, the possibilities available right now, allow for that spiritual journey to become even more unlimited and even more a part of your conscious focus.
Wow. That sounds so amazing. The other thing that I was very taken with is the fact that you practice, which is so yummy, ancient magic. And of course, you spell it in the old English way, which I like, and you blend that, you harmonize that with modern mysticism. Is there a personal experience you can share with us, Tyler, where you witnessed or you performed a magical act and it profoundly transformed your life or worldview or somebody else's life or worldview?
I am going to tell you and the audience a quick story about one of these examples because it is one of my favorite ones. And me and I have a team I work with. They help me make these lovely backgrounds, my wonderful friends Mario and Lynn. And we've done a great deal of artistic projects, spiritual projects together. And for a long time, we were gathering together and we're performing these esoteric magical operations to create change, not just in our lives, but in the world. And during the, I'm going to say the, if a time period were similar to Voldemort. I'm going to say, he who shall not be named. But during the COVID-19 times, when there were the lockdowns, me and my team got together and did magical operations. We didn't want to erase the lockdowns. The next day, the federal government ended the lockdowns. So it was a very noticeable change. This was the very next day. And I was in a very, how would I put, a city that really bought into that. And that next day was a big adjustment period because people were back in society, and we got to see the magic work overnight. We didn't know there were talks, in the government to make that change, right? So some people could say it was a perfect coincidence, but to us, it's the evidence of the magic. And that's the first rule in magic. Whenever you see success from the manifestation, validate it. Validate it. So even though, right, the rational person would say, "Oh, good coincidence," the magical person says, "Oh, thank you, magical power. Let's make more magic happen." So that was the biggest one. We were really excited with that in particular.
Well, thank you.
You're
I'm
welcome.
grateful. I'm grateful it worked. I think that's very powerful and very timely. Just incredible that whole time. I know that whole time is it's gonna go down as a reference point for everyone who is alive through it. And I'm starting, as someone who's also involved with media, I'm starting to see that arise. It's coming out in books, it's coming out in songs, all of that period where people are have been expressing themselves, but now it's going to be in the written and the vocal form. It was very powerful. And really, how beautiful to do that magic and see a result that quickly. That is a powerful example.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun to do, and I'm totally with you. I think that with all of that craziness that happened, it caused so many people to leave where they were living. So many lifestyles got rearranged, and there was this sort of period where people weren't expressing themselves. They weren't gathering. And I sense now, just like you're saying, all of this is turning into an outpouring of creative energy. And they say that, before the Renaissance, right, there were the Dark Ages. So there's a sense of the before time, the after time in terms of what we're moving into.
Yes, absolutely. Much needed to happen. New choices occurred, and I think it for sure changed our timeline. And so, with your blessing, if you feel okay to channel right now, I'd like to invite in Ryo or Ryoka or any being that chooses and is benevolent to come through you at this time. We'd be very grateful.
Certainly. I'll go ahead and take a moment to prepare myself. I'll go into the altered state, and then we'll bring Ryoka forth. Thank you, Debbie, for this amazing co-creation.
My honor.
Before we thank you for joining us for this ecstatic co-creative interaction that we share with one another this day of your respective and collective times. How are you, and how is your eternal spiral of the here and now moving for you?
Oh, what a beautiful opening. How is my eternal spiral? Wow. That is beautiful. Well, I think it's going quite well. And as a big part of that eternal growing, certainly, and becoming is conversations with beings like you. So I would like to thank you so much for being with us on Dare to Dream today. And I would like to invite you to share with us a little bit about yourself so we can better understand, do you have form? Are you only energy? Do you have family? Things like that.
Certainly. So I'm going to explain myself in a certain way, and it may sound at first like I am multiple people, but really what I am describing here is the multiple levels that make up my consciousness. So there is a dimension to my consciousness that is completely luminous. To me, this is my future self. This is the being that you have brought forth that you call Ryoka. Ryoka represents a future luminous version of me. I am a extension of this luminous being. And as an extension, I manifest myself in a type of quasi-physical embodiment. As a type of extraterrestrial being to all of you, whom is a part of the Sasanian civilization. The channel is my past self. He is a more greatly densified version of me. For in your here now experience, the collective energies are slightly denser than my civilization's here now experience. So I am a type of trinary consciousness made up of a light being that expresses as a Sasanian extraterrestrial, that expresses as the human avatar that you see before you. So it is as if I am looking through three vantage points simultaneously in my delivery of this information.
Absolutely beautiful. Thank you. What a succinct explanation and trinary. I had not heard that before. And so that's exciting to me that you can see so from so many different perspectives. I want to start, Raya, with our history, meaning Earth history. If I understand correctly, there was a break in our Earth Akashic records, and there is no record, at least to our knowledge, of what existed before this break. Is that true? Was there an Akashic break in Earth's history? And if so, why did that happen?
So it's not as if the Akash itself can go through a fracturing or a schism, because the Akash itself is the spaciousness that holds your experience of reality. So all of your experiences are taking place within the environment that you call space. So space is not just up in the sky, in the universe. Space exists all around you. Space exists within you. That is the Akash. So the space cannot be broken. Space can be, in a sense, distorted and manipulated, but it cannot necessarily be fractured. It cannot be broken. It can be manipulated like a type of portal, and beings will use portals in the space to travel, but the Akash itself cannot be broken. It is the unifying spiritual web of spaciousness that acts as a type of super scaffolding for the many existences, the many universes that are. So what can break, what can go through a fracture, is a being's relationship with the living intelligence that is the space, that is the Akash. The space itself, the Akashic space, has a spirit. It has a soul. Many people on your planet refer to that spirit and soul of the Akash as God. And there's infinite levels to this being, because there are levels beyond the Akash, levels beyond the space, because even space is a construct, which means there is a creative principle behind it. So what you call God continues to get more and more and more fundamental as you explore it. And as you experience it, it becomes even more and more and more expansive. So humanity, through its exploration, eventually reached a tipping point. Humanity became incredibly evolved, incredibly sophisticated. If you were to compare where your species was linearly to where you are now, most of you would be astonished. Levels of technological and spiritual capacity that transcend even your wildest concepts of dreams presently. As you know, when a sensation reaches its peak, sometimes it will flip into its opposite. Humanity reached a state of omniscience. They became the Akash. Humanity went through a total ascension. And this total ascension process revealed so much information, so much clarity, so much wisdom, that it began to manifest its opposite, a total forgetting, a total amnesia, as a way to explore that same theme of ascension, but with even greater limitation, with even greater restriction, to produce an even greater ascension the second time around. So do keep in mind that when a species ascends, it's as if the entire species becomes one with the Akash. It becomes one with that God of the space, the hidden God. And when humanity reaches this level, it's as if they have transcended their physicality together. They have evolved from
physical beings into quasi-physical beings, finally into pure energy beings again. When this happens, the ascended species is then given a few options. They can incarnate back into that world, or they can remain in that realm of light and spaciousness and act as ascended masters and guides to those whom choose to incarnate on that world that they had recently ascended from. So once humanity reached this peak of ascension, some of those beings remained and others returned to the earth, taking on new bodies. Between those periods, there were cataclysms, there were forgettings. So humanity's point of view as it related to spiritual knowledge became lesser and lesser and lesser because of those cataclysms. Keep in mind, when I talk about humanity ascending, I'm not referring necessarily to people who look like you. I am talking about the spiritual consciousness that is humanity, which takes on many different forms of body. But all of those forms of biological consciousness and embodiment that the spirit of humanity incarnates into, these forms are governed by the power of five. You have the idea of five digits on the hand, five digits on the toes, representing your connection to the five elements, representing your stewardship of the earth. So earlier versions of humanity reached a total point of ascension, merging with the source to increase their spiritual evolution. Many chose to come back to the earth and incarnate once more, but they chose to do that following the cataclysms, thus making their evolutionary process much more challenging, thus meaning they would have to penetrate even more deeply into the mysteries, therefore leading to an even more glorious ascension, because the deeper you go into the darkness, the more of the hidden light you are able to reveal.
Whoa, that's powerful. The deeper you go into the darkness, the more of the hidden light you can reveal. That statement, you're talking about humanity, but that is true for all of us personally in our own evolution. It is true for the earth. It is true for the cosmos on every single level. That is correct. That is what evolution really is. That's what shadow work is about. Being responsible, growing, all of that. And so with everything you're saying, then how old actually is humanity on this planet pre-cataclysms?
In terms of pre-cataclysmic humanity, over 500,000 years old. Incredibly ancient. Keep in mind, before you took on these earth-based embodiments, your human consciousness expressed in the space-faring species and collective that your ancient Sumerians called Anunnaki. So this greater humanoid form that traveled throughout not just the galaxy, but also the various universes, it was this type of form that humanity was busy expressing itself as. So many people on your planet will create this separation between your people, humanity, and what you might consider to be Anunnaki, humanoid founders. Before you took on these bodies, before you started incarnating on the earth, you were incarnating in their civilization. You were incarnating as these space-faring humanoid beings. So the spirit of humanity is, from our viewpoint, eternal and timeless. And the reason we say this is no matter how far backward, no matter how far forward we look, we see that spirit of humanity taking on embodiments as different species. Your species, one of the newer ones, not the newest. Do keep in mind that there have been multiple versions of humanity, some of them sharing the planet with one another simultaneously. So this idea of Homo sapien being the primary human form, this is a newer manifestation.
Newer manifestation. Okay. And going back a little bit, what do we need to know today about Lemuria and about Atlantis in order to help navigate these times?
To simplify these civilizations in terms of their spiritual message for your here now society, the balance between Lemuria and Atlantis is the balance of nature and technology, specifically. So, when technology serves purposes that are devoid of nature and nature's purposes, technology, even if it's well-intentioned, will work against nature. Technology ought to be produced that supports nature, that supports her processes, the health and vitality of all people. This is an expression of nature. This is an expression of nature flowing in a wonderful way. So, as you move forward into your age of Aquarius, where spirituality and science technology blend, it is important to maintain that balance that the ancients strived to maintain, which was that balance between the shamanic naturalistic approach and the futuristic technological approach. These two extremes not only need to be mastered and embodied, but they are to be put together.
My
And
God,
you will
can
all
I
find
stop
your
you there?
relationship with this.
Thank you.
Please go
That
ahead.
feels so important, what you're saying. And I want to go a little more deeply into that. When you speak about the shamanic, I'll just say it in my own words, the shamanic way of being, I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you are referring to the way the indigenous were so respectful and caring of Mother Gaia, of the planet Earth, the way animism, that they knew that everything had a soul and was alive, the way they interacted and could transcend this realm into other realms. And also, frankly, their connection, their deep connection with extraterrestrials throughout their history. And that is over here. And then you're saying to find this blender, this harmony with also the advancements that are being made. AI is coming out, technology is being formed. We are adopting and have had for a long time a lot of advanced extraterrestrial technology. Is that what you're referring to as a marriage that needs to be formed and where we need to learn from what we did incorrectly in Lemuria and in Atlantis?
This is precisely what we are saying. So, we'll talk about these civilizations in an example-based way. So, you can see how some of these ancient patterns are at play now, and that will assist with the blending. So, many of the ancient Lemurians held on to their, you could say, naturalistic tools, their naturalistic practices, and their ancient spiritual beliefs. They held on to these very tightly as Atlantis began to prosper and grow. They did not adopt the technologies that the Atlanteans were crafting and perfecting. So, what ended up happening was the two civilizations ceased to speak the same language. The Lemurians, many of them said, this way of doing things, it is improper. It is not what our ancestors taught us. They sort of clung to their traditional approach excessively. The Atlanteans began to look at the traditional approach as lesser, as superstitious, as weaker. They have to worship the seasons. They have to worship the elements. Look at them. How cute. We are above the elements. So they took a hubristic approach. We are superior, not just to nature, but also to the superstitious beliefs of those who worship nature. That was what really fed into that ancient schism. So remember, you all use technology. It is a part of your lives. Even your body is a technology. And I'm saying this so those whom have negative associations with technology can come to recognize everything is technology. Even the tree outside is technology. It is organic technology. So you all use technology. Technology that is more naturalistic is in no way superior to technology that is artificial. Technology that is artificial is in no way superior to the naturalistic technologies. They are both different expressions of creation. Knowing that you use technology and you can't get around that, it is important to blend that knowingness with you are a being of time. You exist within a seasonal context, within a rotational planetary context, within a solar systemic context. Many cycles of organization that are within you and are beyond you flow through you. When you recognize both technology and alignment with nature are inescapable, they're ubiquitous, it's what reality is based upon, you will then be able to blend those two polarities. It is only to the lower vantage point that these two things, nature and technology, seem like different things. But from our view and from the view of many other civilizations, these are different expressions of the same thing. So knowing this, you can create that balance point. So honor the seasons. Do not become overly dependent on your technology. When I say honor the seasons, remember, I'm not just talking about the changes in the seasons outside. I'm talking about your seasons. You go through at least four a day. Honor your seasons. Honor your cycle and process as it spirals in that here now dance with the greater cycles and processes. And that alignment with nature and that responsible use of technology will allow for these two to naturally find that golden mean, that golden center point that you can allow for your life to spiral with, and it will support you.
And does that also harken back to the Lyran and AI wars that took place in our history? Their inability to find the beautiful path to utilize both together in a marriage, but instead became, well, there's a lot of history there I could talk about, but the Lyra and AI wars, is that a lot alike to what you're talking about with Lemuria, Atlantis, the lessons we can learn today?
In terms of the Lyra and AI wars, this ultimately came down to a very, very common issue that humans on your planet are currently dealing with. And the issue is the following. One group, one collective has their sense of what alignment is, their sense of what correct behavior is, their sense of what perfection is. And this group, this collective, then attempts to put that on to other people and other groups and other collectives, regardless of what they think. So this type of needing to dominate others and needing to dominate others who think differently, this is a challenge many people on Earth are still going through. This is a challenge that many species had to go through. And with these very ancient wars, specifically the Lyran AI wars, these were challenges that they were not exempt from. Because remember, with a higher vantage point comes more information, more knowledge. And to an ego consciousness that is still young, that is still new, that is still growing, that can be a lot to integrate. And that ego can say to itself, well, from up here, I see the order, I see the patterns, I see exactly how everything is. I'm correct, I'm right. Anything different? It's a lesser view. It's lower than me. It's incorrect. It's wrong. They just don't understand. Here, let me show them. Oh, they still don't understand? Let me force them because I know better. That's the ancient motivation that fed into this. Obviously, now all of you are aware that that's not how you change people's minds. That's not a healthy way to demonstrate power. That's not a healthy way to organize a society. So that schism between Lemuria and Atlantis, yes, had certain qualities that paralleled those ancient Lyran AI wars. So there's certain parallels, but both of those scenarios also have their unique themes. And as they are investigated, more teachings, more history shall manifest.
Thank you. Very interesting. I am curious right now on this planet, in this fascinating moment in time, which extraterrestrial species are playing a significant role of the many gabillion species in the cosmos upon cosmos? Who is playing the most important role with humanity right now, one way or the other, light or dark? And what are they doing for us and with us?
So, I will speak about some of the behind-the-scenes players. They are more like the Akash. They are more like the space. They are holding the storyline. That is your species contact timeline. Therefore, many of you would say their role is most important. It's almost like they're outside of the universe, holding the universe in their hands like a crystal orb. So, most of you associate that with a great deal of importance, a great deal of influence. The group that has one of the strongest, influential, yet background roles in humanity's ascension process is that of the Andromedans. They do not get a lot of press. Some people speak about them here and there, but these beings play a master-level organizational role. They represent the unified male-female consciousness on one of the highest levels of embodiment, of incarnation that is available. So their species long ago experienced the male-female separation, just like you have here in your experience of the sexes being different. Through their ascension process, the male and female genetics within the individuals of the Andromedan system were able to blend those two polarities, bringing their entire collective into a type of yin yang balance. They learn how to not only blend the energies of their mother and father within them, the sexes within them, but they also learned how to blend light and dark, time and space, higher and lower. All opposites to them became unified again. They became that point of power in the center of the paradox. Through this type of union, the male-female energies were able to be blended at the highest of levels, producing a type of multi-orgasmic loving blissfulness that is, to this day, the collective consciousness of their people. They then broadcast this energy of higher love to all forms of sentient life that they are able to make contact with within this universe. They see your galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, as the lower dimensional reflection of their world. So they send their energies down to all of you, just as you send your loving energies into your shadow, into your lower self, into your inner child dimensions. They do the same thing for all of you. They are pulling your Milky Way galaxy up towards them. They have the largest hand in the evolutionary process, but they play the long game. Eventually, Andromeda and the Milky Way shall overlap and blend. That is what they are calling you to experience, for they have blended all other opposites available to them. The only one left to blend is their galaxy with yours. They see you as their twin flame, and they are calling you to union. And when you call your future self, you are calling them into union.
Wow. So that's the behind the scenes. Who else is playing a significant role right now and how?
We'll talk about the other polarity just to keep it balanced.
Okay.
In terms of your inner earth civilizations. You have many varieties of species that exist within the multidimensional spaces of your world. Some of these species are very similar to the ancient dinosaurs that used to roam the surface of your planet. They are reptilian in nature. They are telepathic in nature. They are serpentine in nature. They are very ancient beings. Some of them are from the Earth. Their ancestors were engineered here by various founder species. Some of these other reptilian groups are genuinely extraterrestrial. They traveled to the Earth and remained here. During that cataclysm period that was mentioned, where there was an ascension and then a destruction, that period of chaos opened a door for other species to enter, because during the cataclysm, humanity no longer was the primary species. Most of humanity had ascended. So during that time, these reptilian beings were able to enter in to the Earth holographic matrix, other beings associated with them, particularly those connected to the Gray Federation, relevant to Antares and Orion, were able to enter in with them. And this is why there are associations between the Grays and the reptilians and underground bases deep in the earth. This was an opportunity for more neutral beings and more densified negative beings to enter in to your earth experience. And they have been here ever since. So many of the Grays that you're seeing, some of them, yes, are coming from your skies, but most of them are coming from bases, if you will, spaces deep within the earth. And they travel up and then they appear in your skies. So these other groups, the reptilians, sometimes referred to as Nagas, and the Greys, whom exist underground, they play a very interesting role. Whilst they are considered to be evil or nefarious by some, we see them more in the same way a scientist would see a type of interesting creature or organism. I shall explain this.
Yes, please.
The reptilians psychically feed on humanity's negativity. So when humanity accumulates a great deal of negativity and suffering, it attracts these reptilian beings into their orbit, into their aura. And the human sometimes will feel as if they're being oppressed by this reptilian. If the human were to take their negative energy and were to offer it shamanically to the earth, the negative energy would descend down into the planet, and these reptilian beings would be able to break it down and transform it into fertilizer, psychic fertilizer for the heart, mind, and the health of Gaia. They play a type of role that an intestinal organism plays in your body. But if the human becomes repressed with their negativity and they accumulate it, the reptilian is not being fed, so it will come to them and it will try to push their buttons. It will try to trigger them. So they explode with negativity and the reptilian being gets its dinner. That is one of the major roles that they play, and they don't have to play that role in that way. If humans are willing to let their sufferings go, if they're willing to take that negative energy instead of accumulating it or throwing it at people, if they're willing to give it down to the earth, if they're willing to send it into the planet as an energy offering, as a sacrifice, the reptilian beings will be able to break that down. They are able to then learn about your experience, and then you are able to experience the higher wisdom of the reptile. And this is the idea of the serpent being brought from the groin up to the crown or third eye. So when you have this natural relationship with the earth, giving the waste to the planet can then grow flowers. So the reptilian beings have the ability to play that role for all of you, but they are playing many other roles because of how humans have engaged with them. And there's no judgment there. Humans have worked with the reptilians for a variety of purposes: to acquire technology, to acquire power, to acquire magical ability and talent. Nevertheless, their primary role is to break down the negativity that humanity generates.
Mm.
The graves have a role, but we'll save that for a moment. We can reflect upon this with you.
Thank you so much. Oh, mind blown. Thank you. What
You're
you
so
have
welcome.
just shared, whew, this last piece is like a short clip that must exist unto itself. I feel like that was such important information for somebody like myself who teaches shamanism, uses shamanistic protocols in order to help heal groups and individuals. This is the one thing that I share with people over and over. When we are extracting what we call hucha, or heavy, dark, negative energy, we put it either into grandfather fire or into the earth. When I work on people, I put it into the earth. And the most fun way I can explain it to people is imagine that the planet Earth is like Pac-Man. That's an old reference, but it's an old game that people used to play where there was a little avatar being that would munch its way through in order to get to a finish line. And so see the earth as munching, mulching this negative energy. And you would think giving something negative, dark, heavy, shadow energy is a cruel thing, but actually the earth can transmute it. So she thrives on it. She turns it into the light. She turns it into the positive. So everything you just said, so powerful. And I love how you're talking about, and anybody right now who's going through anything can do what you are referring to, can take this energy within themselves, and maybe there's something very prevalent happening. Give it to Mother Earth, Pachamama. Let her take it. She knows what to do with it. And in turn, I mean, the ripple of the changes that can happen within ourselves, within culture, within humanity, et cetera, exponentially. It's so big. And this is such beautiful work that I think appears so simple to people, but it is so profound and so accurate.
Behind the simple, you have geometries, matrices, astral energetic machinery that would astound and impress any human whom were to make contact with such a behind-the-scenes viewpoint. The simplest of esoteric or magical actions, actions of alignment, initiate mechanisms of creation and transformation that most people are still attempting to wrap their minds around.
Perfection. So let's bring up, is it okay if I shift into sacred geometry, or did you have more to say about that fantastic conversation?
We can shift into whatever topic is exciting for you. Anything that has been left in the mysterious category shall synchronistically reveal itself at a later date, not just for ourselves and for you, but for all involved. So
Okay. And you know
we're happy
what?
to share with you.
I do want to shift, but for edification, not, I don't want to make anyone in the audience crazy. Was there any other being, any other species that you feel is important to what is happening with humanity right now in the foreground, the background, or very much playing an obvious significant role we may not know about? We've covered the reptilians, we have covered the grays, we've covered the Andromedans, and are there any others?
In terms of the most influential ones currently working with humanity, currently working with the ascension process, the only one we have not mentioned yet that we do sense is important to mention is that of the Sirius Collective. The Sirius Collective is a trinary collective made of two stars, Sirius A and B, and a metaphysical, energetic, higher dimensional third star, sometimes referred to as Sirius C. It is this trinary collective consciousness that is ultimately assisting humanity's individual and collective energy body in activating its trinary pyramidal power. So do keep in mind that when a person activates the major elements within them through awakening each of the elements, empowering them, and forming a personal relationship with them, when this occurs, It's as if the person's aura becomes a pyramid and they pool those elemental energies from deep in the earth. As we mentioned, when you send the negative energy down, the beings who process those denser energies can then process those energies and transform them into energies of goodness. This pyramidal aura draws that abundance, draws that love, draws that blessing up. So what you have recycled and transformed can then return to you as miraculous, synchronistic, fresh energies. So the trinary consciousness of Sirius is designed to awaken that pyramidal elemental awareness and aura for each person on your planet and the entirety of your human collective. When this occurs, this type of trinary auric activation, it will be as if everybody's aura is a mirror of your great pyramid. And the earth energies shall be broadcasted infinitely up and out of the crown chakra of each individual, causing a type of disco ball illumination effect that will ultimately allow for humanity to make contact with a myriad of different extraterrestrial species, because each person on your planet has their own unique extraterrestrial counterpart and ultimately collective that they are associated with. With everyone's crown chakra operating in such a way, it will ultimately invite the grand myriad of species that currently have a loving and auspicious relationship with humanity to join all of you. So the beings of Sirius are building this type of pyramidal aura with all of you behind the scenes. So such an effect can be created. That is the beacon of contact.
Yes. And I just feel gratitude for all of these species that you're talking about to be with us at this time, to care enough about us at this time, to play a role, to assist. And another point that I missed about what you were speaking about earlier regarding the reptilians was this whole idea of the caduceus, of the two snakes going up that we use to indicate healing. Also, for sacred sexuality, and because the snake is the great medicine that teaches us about how to release what no longer serves us. So, I appreciate that you are allowing us to look at this reptilian energy in such a beautiful, beneficial light, and not many people do.
There's a reason for every creature in the garden, including the snake. Always remember this.
That's
All
correct.
creatures play their role in the story.
Yeah. Well, you alluded to earlier about sacred geometry, and I'd like to ask you about magic and sacred geometry because I have heard sacred geometry referred to as the language of light, the language of stillness, having a big proponent in manifestation. Talk about the importance of sacred geometry. How can it be used, and why should it be used?
So there are very nuanced ways of approaching this. But keep in mind, geometries for humans activate the subconscious and activate your relationship with symbolic meaning. For example, when a human being looks at a five-pointed star, their awareness of the head, the hands, and the feet is subtly turned on. The knowingness that you too are a star is activated when a human sees that classic pentagram, the upward facing five-pointed star. If that star is facing up, the human being starts to associate their minds and that symbol with an upward projective orientation. If that star is upside down, the human will start to feel that the energy is being drawn down. So the symbols are mirrors of your own energetic organization. When you work with certain symbols, especially the symbols that mirror nature as it expresses on Earth, and especially the symbols that mirror humanity, a powerful mirroring effect is created in the consciousness of the human being. When an individual works with, for example, a seven-pointed star, the level of consciousness that relates to the solar system, is activated, and the seven chakras. The seven points represent the seven classical planets. If a person were to work with an eight-pointed star, their awareness of omnipresence would become activated, for the eight-pointed star is connected to your sense of the compass, pointing in four cardinal directions, and then the in-between blended directions. So as you work with geometries, you awaken within yourself corresponding symbolic meanings that assist you in creating effects. If a person is looking to build something, the five-pointed star is very useful. It represents the five elements. So they can generate that energy, that spark of life needed to get the thing done or to manifest whatever the subject is. If a person needs the world around them, the planets themselves to spiral in their favor, the seven-pointed star can be used. If they are attempting to merge with the awareness of the source and the three powers of the source, the omnipotence, the omnipresence, and the omniscience, the eight-pointed star can be used. So different geometries activate different effects. There, of course, are going to be some geometries that are not two-dimensional, but are in fact three-dimensional. Some of them even four dimensional, and you have others, fifth dimension, many dimensions of geometries. Each of these nuanced geometries will have their own symbolic and esoteric properties that are mirrored within the human when they engage with the symbols. But one of the easiest ways or most direct ways to determine how multi-dimensional geometries may affect consciousness is to pay attention to the mathematical proportions that are relevant to that multi-dimensional geometry. Because those geometric proportions, those mathematical proportions, those number values, specifically the number values associated with those multi-dimensional shapes, can be broken down into meaning. So pay attention to the major mathematical values associated with some of the more complex multi-dimensional shapes. If you understand the symbolism behind those number values, just go one at a time. Look at the most common number patterns you can find. Work with those meanings. You'll start to understand how you can use these geometries. But every geometry has its own nature, its own personality, if you will, its own constitution that will jive with your personality, your constitution, or perhaps it may not. But regardless, the human creates an effect when they impose their belief, their desire, their will upon that geometry. The geometry on its own creates. The geometry serves as a paintbrush when a human knows how to use it and programs that geometry with the corresponding color of the intention that they wish to make materially manifest.
That's very interesting. That causes me to think about Nikola Tesla, and I research him a lot. I think he was a very fascinating inventor and physicist and human in history. And one, it is said, if it's a myth or not, that he had this fascination with the numbers 369. And I know 369 can correspond with many things mathematically, including pyramids. Is there something to the 369 equation? Is there something about universal laws or manifestation that it has to do with?
There are many esoteric secrets that are built into this idea of the powers of the three, the six, and the nine. We can talk about it in terms of your classical esoteric understandings, and then we can expand it into geometric understandings. Keep in mind that the number three is correspondent with the planet in your solar system, Saturn. Saturn is seen by many of the ancients as the highest planetary god, the highest archon, the highest angel in charge as it relates to the solar system. In ancient times, this being was sometimes referred to as Cronos, father of the gods. The idea is that this three that represents the Trinity, the unified male and female, creates within itself a separation. One half is separated as yang, male. The other half is separated as yin, female. From the three, you get the male, which is the sun, the six. From the three, you get the female, which is the moon, which is nine. So Saturn three, the unified father, the Holy Trinity, if you will, creates within itself a division that gives rise to six, the sun, and then gives rise to nine, the moon. They are seen as its two children. And these three forces, Saturn, Sun, Moon, three, six, nine, have a myriad of different dynamic interactions with one another. They're able to blend in a myriad of diverse ways that give rise to the other expansive colors and planetary energies and frequencies that exist within creation. So, from the blending, the relationship of three, of six, and nine, the other numerical powers, the other planetary powers are brought into existence. So, think of it as an original creational formula that the source itself uses to manifest holographically from these three values. A variety of other values can be brought into existence, for the interaction of these three stimulates the entirety of the divine mind.
When you say original creation formula, so for a short period of time, I was doing an attempt at this. I was using my mornings to set a very particular intention three times. And then in the afternoon, I do it six times. And then in the evening, I do it nine times. And then ostensibly, it's good to do this for 3 to 4 weeks. Is that what you mean by original creation formula? And if not, we just wipe that slate clean. That how would one use this? How would one use harness this 369 in order to manifest, in order to create?
So, your approach with it is a very valid, very useful approach. The 369 powers can be explored in a myriad of different ways by different people. So, it's all about creating really your own ritual of resonance with that creational formula. So, if reciting an affirmation three times in the morning, six times in the afternoon, nine times in the evening is an enjoyable way for you to resonate with that creational principle, then it will be an effective way. It will work very well. And it is in tune with that creational principle. You have the morning, the initiator, the Saturnian force, then giving rise to the solar force next in line. In the afternoon, that solar force then giving rise to the feminine force, the sunset and evening, representing the nine repetitions done later in the day at the sunset or following the sunset. So your flow and relationship with the numbers is very useful. That's a very valid and useful way to go about it. There's many ways a person could go about it. In terms of the head, this corresponds with Saturn. In terms of the chest, this corresponds with the sun. In terms of the low abdomen, the groin, this corresponds with the moon. So those mantras could also be repeated to these centers. Say the mantra three times here, six times here, nine times down below. That is a way that this could be done as well. So there's many ways to play around and to access these underlying frequencies that represent this original creational formula. Through your imagination and your own creative ritual process, you'll find your preferred ways of tuning into this. And that really is the nature of magic, creating a ritual that is based on certain universal laws and principles that you enjoy, that you resonate with, that you combine with action that assists you in creating tangible physical results.
Magnificent. What a great gift that is. You just gave us and all those connections. Amazing. Amazing to pull all of that together. Giving the audience a little bit of context, a photon is an elementary particle. It's a quantum of the electromagnetic field, and it includes electromagnetic radiation such as light and radio waves. Do photons or harnessing photons information, photonic information through sacred geometry allow us humans to access or manipulate higher dimensions?
Oh, absolutely, yes. As I had mentioned before, the space around you is alive. The space around you, the Akash within and without, can be distorted, can be altered, can be manipulated. And one of the ways that you can do this is through introducing certain vibrations into the space. It's through introducing certain geometries into the space. It is this Akashic scaffolding that creates the necessary environmental framework that allows the photons to be able to spiral forth into the reality in a healthful way. Photons move in a spiral pattern when they are in their particle form. So when the Akashic energy is stimulated through auspicious geometries, when the spatial energy is balanced through geometry, the photons will flow with greater efficiency. They will be absorbed with greater ease. The human being that is engaging with the photons in said space will be in an altered state from interacting with the geometry. So they'll be able to absorb not just more light from the higher state, but they'll be able to understand more of the information contained within the light. Because just as I described myself, there is the channel, the physical avatar, whom is connected to me, the extraterrestrial counterpart, whom is connected to the higher expression of soul. The photon is also a densified embodiment of a greater particle of light. So you can start to receive those higher dimensional aspects from the photon through curating an atmosphere within your space that is geometrically organized by the sacred ratios, by the sacred proportions. This could be as simple as having a pyramid that you meditate within. This could be as simple as having some type of sacred geometrical object on your desk. These could be as simple as wearing certain geometric designs and styles as rings or necklaces, even on your shirt, even on clothing. These types of effects can be achieved where the space itself can be brought into a higher level of quality, thus allowing for greater photonic resonance and greater informational access from those photons.
Ryoka, you've given us so much. I want to end my conversation with you with a quote from you, which is about channeling love. Because of your warm-blooded mammalian power and your ability to mirror one another, you are able to, through that group resonance, channel into your species' collective mind the healing power, the enlightening power, the miraculous power of unconditional love in a way that is superior compared to other species whom do not have the same type of DNA configuration, whom do not have the same type of neurology. I want to thank you for that and ask you for a little explanation, because I think in that beautiful quote, what you're saying, a lot of humans deem themselves to be far less than advanced extraterrestrial species such as yours. And if I understand correctly, we are definitely not the kindergarten gardeners, but we are actually, we impress sometimes other species because of our ability to love, our ability to be resilient, to forgive, and to have compassion. Can you illuminate a little bit more what you meant by that quote?
Sure. So this we observe most commonly in your people when you are all young, before the acquired personality, the ego construct develops. Many of you, when you are children, are freely giving and receiving love and affection and good energy. Even if there are sufferings in the childhood, many children draw upon that connection to source, to spirit, and to that higher paternal connection that they feel with the mother and father. Children tend to express themselves with greater boldness, with greater energy. They have a faith that things will work out, even if they don't understand how things will work out. There's a type of openness, a type of curiosity, and a type of goodwill that we see in most children on your planet, regardless of the time period we're observing on Earth. We know that that may not be everyone's relationship with their childhood. We know childhood on Earth can have both joys and pains. With that said, we see beyond the joys and the pains to the underlying attitude and nature of the inner child spirit and archetype. And it is that inner child spirit and archetype that we truly see humanity as. So we do see you in that way as innocent children. We see you as beings whom are exploring as many ways as they're able to, the art of giving and receiving love. One of the ways that you're doing that is through the collective amnesia and through the transformation of negative belief systems. This is not, of course, the only way you explore love. Many of you explore love in more direct ways, showing affection for one another, acts of kindness, building one another up. But nevertheless, one of the other ways you have chosen to give and receive love is through the exploration of some of these negative themes. So when we look at your people, no matter what you're doing, because of that warm-blooded mammalian power that encourages you to share love, we see all actions, both light and dark, as humanity's best attempt at that moment to successfully give and receive love. So we see you constantly sharing love. We see you evolving your art form of giving and receiving love as a people, and we see you becoming more skillful in it every day. Other species observe this and watch you because love is not as natural to them. When you are warm-blooded, when you are mammalian, you have a very strong resonance with those frequencies of unconditional love. Love is like a fire. That is why warm-blooded beings, especially warm-blooded mammals, have a strong connection to love. This also, of course, can predispose a species to aggressive tendencies because love's a fire. The fire's not managed properly. Well, the fire can burn out of control, and you have that duality of love and war, represented by your Sumerian goddess Inanna. So we see you as a beautiful teacher of love. Whether you are successful or not in your attempts to give and receive love, for you it is educational if you use it in such a way. And for us and for many other species, it is educational. We enjoy learning from all of you. We love learning from all of you. And of course, we unconditionally love all of you. We have grown tremendously as a people, and many species continue to grow from humanity's example.
Thank you so much. And I send you my unconditional love and gratitude for today. This was an incredible conversation.
Thank you so much for engaging with us. We receive this wonderful unconditional love you share, and we thank you and all whom have participated in this co-creation, our species, unconditional love to all of you. May your cup be filled with the living light of your future self, your higher self, and your unified supreme source self of unconditional love, wisdom, and naturalistic alignment. Good day.
Good day. Very beautiful. And I'm just going to tell the audience as Ryo goes back. I don't even think it's as black and white as that. But as we gently bring Tyler Ellison back, I want to remind people that his website is thegalacticguide.com. I would absolutely love to read your comments, to feel your energy around this profound conversation that was just had. And dear Tyler, welcome back. What a heroic journey you just took us on.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. It's great to be back. And yeah, what a whirlwind of topics. It was a true vortex of information. I really enjoyed myself. It was great to get those questions. A little blurry, but some of them stand out. A part of me can hear a little bit of the conversation. So I love what you asked. And like we mentioned beforehand, new information where I'm also like, oh wow, I gotta, okay, take note of some of this.
And the great news is there's a replay, so we can, I mean, I will for sure be listening back to this. There were some sections that would just, there was a whole section in there when you went into the reptilian information. I mean, it was everything to contain myself, but I was writing a lot of notes. Brilliant. And then also that 369 information and the connection to Saturn and the third eye and the heart and the root chakra, as a creation formula. The fact that the Andromedans and the reptilians and the Sirians are very much involved in us right now, and even that you went into the inner earth, I have to say, was fantastic for me because that is a big curiosity. And so I hope you will get a chance to listen to some of the brilliance that came out of you as well.
Oh, thank you. I'll definitely be taking a deep listen to it because it's a big galactic tour. And as we're talking about it, I'm seeing that now. We did go to just about as many floors as we could in the skyscraper of consciousness.
Skyscraper of consciousness, so beautiful. Will you tell people how can they work with you individually or in groups? What are the things that you're offering right now?
So, if people desire to have one-on-one sessions with the entity Ryoko, who we just heard from, I am available for those one-on-one sessions on the galacticguide.com. Those sessions can be acquired. And we also teach on that website the process that is the magical process, how to use geometries, how to use mantra and energy to make changes within the self, but also real changes in your life to affect change regardless of distance, regardless of time. This is a very real ability. We use it all the time. And you can be a superhero with that ability. We just got to remind you about how the tools work, because most of this people have played with in other lifetimes. So it's a matter of reintroducing the symbols, the techniques, and then when people get the hang of it, it's the horse is right out of the gate.
Oh, I
So we
love
teach.
that. Yes, everybody needs magic right now. Are these live interactions that you do? Are they programs that are online that people go through?
So we have both. We have one-on-one training that is with me, where people can receive the guidance as to how to perform these techniques. And then we also have on the store on the galacticguide.com different programs we have done in the past that range from tantric alchemy to the fusion of the five forces and elemental powers. We have many occult teachings that people can purchase, and it's made for people of any skill level. So advanced people will get something from it, and newer people get the step-by-step instruction to feel confident in their energy mastery.
Beautiful and yummy. Mr. Tyler Ellison, this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
So, for this type of work, as it involves me and my creative focus, what I have been very excited about is the on-the-ground movement to initiate open contact, which is essentially using magic, meditation, and group consciousness to create deeper levels of UFO manifestation, deeper levels of dream contact, and ultimately deeper levels of extraterrestrial projection onto the planet. So, my role between now and 2027 is to have both online and physical programs that helps really prepare people for this. Because once this open contact's achieved, the genie's not going back in the bottle, right? We're not getting that toothpaste back in the tube. So my role now is to help people be as prepared as they can be for all of this. So our upcoming goals are teach people the alien meditations and the healing love meditations, the alchemy meditations. So these forces, higher, middle, lower, can be nourished and supported and ready to receive the activated minds of these ET beings who describe themselves as trinary, right? We heard Ryoko talking about that. So
seeing them can be powerful. It can be like seeing three beings in one being. And we have to be prepared to receive that. And a great way is to get to know the three dimensions of the self.
Thank you for the great work you're doing. And again, folks, that is thegalacticguide.com. Tyler Ellison, you're a joy. Thank you for coming on the show. So much gratitude.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Debbie. Thanks for having me. And to everybody that listened, I really appreciate your attention. May this transmission continue to multiply your goodness, your love, your happiness.
Oh, your goodness, your love, and your happiness. And I end today's show with this quote: "Everything passes, nothing remains." Understand this, loosen your grip, and find serenity. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger, and leave a comment, share. I read them all, and it really helps the matrix for the next person to find this when they need it. Next up on the show, I am featuring Barbara Hand Clow, the internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, author, and Mayan calendar researcher. Thanks so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream. It truly has been a wealth of information and an absolute joy to spend this time with you.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DebbiDashinger. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.